This is PCJ Radio on 88.2 FM. This is PCJ Radio on 107.5 FM in Nairobi, Kenya. And nationwide on 5. This is PCJ Radio on KBCT in Waco, Texas. This is PCJ Radio on 9955 kilohertz to Latin America. This is PCJ Radio on 7590 kilohertz DRM. On shortwave, satellite, and the internet, this is PCJ Radio.
Welcome to Switzerland in Sound, produced and presented by Bob Zanotti.
In my letter from Switzerland back in October 2011, I talked about the changes in Swiss politics and society that I had been sensing. Well, that feeling was borne out in the general elections that followed a few days later, when there was a major shift in political polarization at the polls. And now in March 2012, another surprise has been recorded, as well as another indication that Swiss voters have become even more mature and discerning. They again demonstrated a desire for change, as well as a desire to liberate themselves from some of the political and economic ruts this country has been in for a long time. On March 11th, there were 5 federal issues to be decided by referendum. 3 of them were especially important. The biggest issue, and also the biggest upset, was a proposition to limit the number of so-called second dwellings in Swiss communities. This was a people's initiative launched by the Swiss environmental protectionist warhorse, 85-year-old Franz Weber. The idea was to put a stop to uncontrolled construction and development of vacation dwellings, often belonging to non-resident foreigners, especially in resort areas. These second dwellings remain empty for most of the year. Not only were they seen as a threat to the natural landscape, but they also require costly infrastructure to support them. Nobody gave this initiative much of a chance of passage because of the large number of special interest groups that were against it, not least areas with a tourism-based economy. But at the end of the day, it was accepted by a small but sufficient margin, and so it must now be put into law. But because no one thought the initiative had a chance of passage, politicians and construction industry interests were caught napping, with nobody in government really sure how the law will be implemented in practice. Of course, some tourism and local political interests are up in arms over the success of the initiative, but voters were not sympathetic to them. The success of the Weber initiative can be explained by the Swiss love of nature and the fear that this country's natural beauty and recreational assets would be destroyed by continued uncontrolled building. Another factor was the left-wing resentment of big business interests, which they perceived as selling out the nation for the sake of an unscrupulous quick profit. In either case, the brakes had to be applied, and now they will be. Another significant issue on the ballot was a proposed law which amounted to the establishment of a book price cartel all over the country. German-speaking Switzerland had done away with mandatory fixed prices for books, but Parliament passed a law to reintroduce book price fixing, largely because of pressure from the bookstore and kiosk lobby. Signatures were collected to put the issue to a referendum. And now the Swiss electorate has decided on a free, competitive approach to book pricing all over the country. One of the reasons for the success of the proposition was campaigns by consumer protection groups, which have repeatedly called attention to the substantially higher prices for books and other literature sold here, compared to prices in neighboring countries. They also drew attention to the fact that more and more literature is being sold via the internet, including the new phenomenon of e-literature. The classic book-selling trade argued in favor of fixed book prices, claiming this would promote Swiss authors. But the electorate wasn't buying it. The third major issue on the March ballot was the one that made the news abroad. It was a people's initiative calling for 6 weeks of paid vacation for everyone as compared to the 4 weeks most Swiss have now. 6 weeks, by the way, is the European norm. But here, the Swiss seemingly voted against their own personal interests and rejected the initiative by a wide margin. The antis, mainly from the employer's side, argued that more paid vacation would hurt Switzerland's productivity and competitiveness, especially in view of the current high value of the Swiss franc, which makes it harder to sell exports. Those of us with a more cynical view found this argument difficult to understand, given the fact that Swiss workers are already among the most productive in the world, and that the cost of treating illnesses associated with work-related stress is fixed at a whopping 10 billion francs a year, not to mention the lost productivity it also causes. But at the polls, Swiss voters decided that tranquilizers and antidepressants were better than 2 more weeks holiday every year. The fact is that the Swiss get very worried over anything that might endanger job security. It's a very easy sell for employers, and they play that card for what it's worth. Add to that the fear that many Swiss, particularly in German Switzerland, have of their employers. In this area, change hasn't yet arrived. Nespresso, a clever contraction of Nestle, Switzerland's and the world's biggest food concern, and the word espresso, the traditional Italian approach to making coffee. The brand is personified by the American actor George Clooney, who appears in Nespresso advertising. Welcome to Switzerland in Sound, and also welcome to Martin Bugmann, who's the manager of a new Nespresso production center. It's quite exciting news. In Avanche, in western Switzerland, in Canton Vaud, which used to, incidentally, many years ago, under Roman rule, was the capital of the province of Helvetia, or Switzerland. Mr. Bugmann, for those who may not know what Nespresso is, would you please first describe the product concept and who your major target market is, and where you've had the greatest successes so far?
Yes, the first thing what I can say on the product, Nespresso is really is based on a trilogy. We try to deliver the perfect coffee at the place of consumption, at everyone's home's place or wherever he likes to have the coffee, and therefore it's based on a trilogy. It's basically a combination of the best coffee which we put in these capsules, and about smart and stylish coffee machines. And the third part is really personalized customer service. It's really positioned in a luxury segment, and there we really try to reach everybody which likes to spend or enjoy for five minutes of pleasure when drinking a coffee.
This is uncompromising quality, we could put it that way, from the machine itself down to the blend.
Yes, exactly. We try to control the entire value chain with first priority on quality. We want to have really the best coffee, the perfect coffee in the cup.
Well, here in Europe, the product is certainly very well known. We mentioned George Clooney, the American actor. He identifies with the image very, very well, seems to be very successful at it, and people remember him. But in terms of sales and product turnover, where have you done the best, geographically speaking?
I think there is two things which we can have a look at. It's clear that the Nespresso started in Central Europe, in Switzerland. So this is like the highest market penetration, so to speak, is in Europe. So this is by far the most important market today. But we can say with the expansion now in our over 50 markets worldwide, we have double-digit growth in every single country around the world.
Well, now we get to the heart of the Nespresso product, which is the coffee, and that is packed in aluminum capsules, which are typical of your product concept. Now, these are what you are producing now in Avash. How big is your production, and where does the production go mainly?
If you look at the size, there are different aspects which you can have a look at. So if you look at the building, it's a building of 400,000 cubic meters. It's a big building, basically. And inside, we have today a capacity to produce around 4.8 billion capsules per year. And this can be extended to 8 billion in the next steps.
That's a lot of coffee.
Yes. And we have around 340 people working at the moment, and this can go up to 600 according to market demand on our product. And from Avanche, basically, we deliver the coffee worldwide in all of our 50 markets, from Japan to Australia to Argentina, around the world.
So if someone has an espresso, it's probably going to be made in Avanche, in other words.
Yes, the probability is very high.
Now, in this day of factory closures, it was certainly good news to the Swiss economy that you actually opened a factory. That was almost sensational news under the economic situation we have now. Actually, how big is the impact on the local economy?
If you look at the very local around Avanche, I think this is a major event because we bring in 340 workplace. Just to give you put this in relation, the commune of Avanche has about 2,700 inhabitants. So it's we had 15% of workplaces in Avanche based on the population. So for them, it's quite a big amount. But I think what is even more important is the emotional impact. This gives such a big project in a region which is not well developed or not so developed economically. This gives a lot of hope to people, like the bright light at the end of a tunnel.
There's also tax revenue for the local community, which is substantial, I would imagine.
I think this is one part which will come. But not only this tax revenue, but all the employees, they live around and they pay indirect taxes, not from the company, but their own, and also the consumption they bring.
Was there any special reason, Mr. Bugmann, for choosing Switzerland and Avanche in particular as the site for the new espresso facility?
We look basically at the entire Europe, and finally Avanche won based on a set of different criteria. Of course, the financial criteria was one, and this showed that Switzerland as a production place is competitive within Europe. But another part which was also very important is the quality which we need from our employees and to deliver the best coffee possible. And therefore, we had excellent experience in Orb. This is half an hour also in Switzerland, and this was also for us this labels made in Switzerland, but it's really true that we had good experience with this one, and we didn't want to compromise on quality. So therefore, we built on that experience, and Avanche has been selected also based on the quality of the employees we can find here.
Now, one potential problem here, if you want to call it a problem or an issue, the product you're producing, very high technology, high quality, but it's based on the use of quite a bit of aluminum coffee capsules that contain the blend of coffee for the machine. I can imagine that some people, particularly environmentalists, might have doubts about this, the impact on the environment and the issue of recycling. I mean, how have you tackled this issue?
I think, first of all, I think it's important to know that aluminum is basically the best material you can find today to protect coffee of the, his enemy number one. This is oxygen. It's the best oxygen barrier you can find. So this is the reason to assure perfect quality. We didn't do any compromise. Now, of course, recycling is really one key part also in our operations. And therefore, what we do, for example, in Switzerland, we have built up an own recycling system. And up to now in Switzerland, we recycle around 65% of our used coffee capsules. And there, the aluminum and coffee is separated, and the aluminum is 100% recycled out of this process. And in other countries, we are developing or implementing similar systems, and this is always in close collaboration with the governments of the different countries to find synergies with their own recycling systems.
Well, it sounds like it's time for coffee. Martin Bugmund, manager of the new Nespresso coffee capsule factory at Avanche in Western Switzerland. Thank you very much for talking to us on Switzerland in Sound.
You can now hear programs from PCJ Radio while on the go with Stitcher Smart Radio. Stitcher is a free news and talk mobile app available for your smartphone. Downloading is quick and easy. Just find Stitcher in the App Store. It's free and just takes a few seconds. Then during registration, hit the promo code box and enter PCJ to get automatically entered to win $100. For more information, go to www.pcjmedia.com and click on the Stitcher logo on the right menu. PCJ Radio on the go with Stitcher Smart Radio.
I'm standing over the birthplace of Switzerland. This is not an exaggeration. It is literally true. I don't know how high it is. I would say probably about 500 feet or more, a couple of hundred meters above what's called the Rütli, R-U-Umlaut, T-L-I, the Rütli Meadow, which is where, according to the story, probably late in the evening of the 1st of August, 1291, a group of Swiss patriots, it wasn't Switzerland then, gathered together to swear allegiance and to swear the Pact of Everlasting Alliance, where they agreed to form a common defense pact. Let me tell you where we are exactly. We are in the very small village of Seelisberg, S-E-E-L-I-S-B-E-R-G. Seelisberg is in the canton or state of Uri, which is a small canton in central Switzerland. We are above one of the extensions, one of the arms or branches of the beautiful, breathtaking Lake of Lucerne. Why is this place so important? It's important to different people for different reasons. If we're talking about Swiss patriots and the Swiss citizen, this is the heartland. This is the Swiss heartland where it all began in 1291. We can look over and see down below at the other end of the lake, Altdorf, the legendary home of William Tell, the Swiss national hero. And we have this breathtaking beauty here. This picture taken from Seelisberg, and not actually taken, but painted, actually, of Seelisberg, is featured in the chambers of the Swiss House of Representatives in Bern. Before we go any further, let me welcome Otto Odermatt. Mr. Odermatt is actually a native son of this area, not from Seelisberg, but close by in the canton of Nidwalden. You're really neighbors just down the street.
Yes, I'm born in Stans, and since 20 years I'm living here in Seelisberg, in this beautiful place, how you said it exactly right. Mm-hmm. You know, there are people, they say they come from very far, and they say we have never seen such a beautiful place like Seelisberg. And Marishi says it's Seelisberg is really heaven on earth.
Now, you mentioned Maharishi, and that's the other part of the story, because if we turn around, we face away from the lake. Here comes a lake steamer coming into the Rütli Meadow, where many people make the pilgrimage down there. We turn around, and in front of us, Mr. Odermatt, is a magnificent hotel of the great era of the British tourism. And this is the famous Sonnenberg, or yes. Sun Mountain Hotel, yes. which was full of aristocracy, wealthy, you know, the rich and famous of the day. But then it fell into disrepair because the Grand Tour tourism declined, mm-hmm. and it was bought by the Transcendental Meditation Movement. And you mentioned Maharishi Mahesh Yogi, who was, of course, the guru, to use that term, or the yogi to the Beatles and many other people, the one who brought Transcendental Meditation, one of the forms of ancient Vedic or Indian meditation, to the West. And he made his headquarters here.
From 72 to 84, Maharishi was here. And he has done most of the activity out from here, from Salisbury, for all over the world.
Before we go anywhere else, here is a monument which was erected. I'll read at least part of it because it's quite lengthy. World Government of the Age of Enlightenment, International Capital of the Age of Enlightenment, Salisbury, Switzerland. I was there at the opening of that event.
Yes.
I believe, if I remember correctly, it was on a lake steamer.
Yes.
Maharishi and hundreds of journalists were there.
Yeah, yeah.
That's when I interviewed him, I believe, the last time. And this goes back to the 12th of January, 1976. I knew what I was doing on that particular day.
Yes.
And here are the gardens, which are actually across the street. At one time, this used to be a restaurant. This was the Terrace Restaurant,
yes,
part
yes.
of the hotel.
Yes, yes. This was a part of the hotel. And then because you have here a very beautiful view on Fronalbstock, on Mieten, on,
this is one of the great classic views of Switzerland.
On Breistenstock, it's so yeah. beautiful, and it's always exciting when the people come here. They can't believe how beautiful it is, Salisbury. And you can walk around, you can go on the boat, you can swim in the small lake. And when you open in the small lake the mouth during swimming, you can drink the water because
so clean.
It's so clear.
Yeah.
Clean, huh?
Well, here is a beautiful fountain. The grounds are very nicely kept by the gardener. This is a fountain which unfortunately we don't need on this particular day because we do have some light rain falling. Actually, it's quite interesting up here in Salisbury. You probably have at least as much sun as you have rain, if not more, because of that famous fern. The dry wind from the south,
yes.
which comes through here and dries everything out very quickly. And very often, I believe, you're much warmer here than in other parts
yes,
of Switzerland.
That's true.
Even in winter, you can get like 20 degrees, 68 degrees Fahrenheit.
Yes, this can happen when the fern goes, the snow goes very quick away. Huh?
There are people living here who have nothing to do with Transcendental Meditation. Before Maharishi came, there was nothing here but cows and people making cheese and doing some farming. It was a very, very rustic and very quiet place. I think really it is still very much like that, isn't it, here in Salisbury?
Yeah, it's a touristic place. You know, we have different hotels here from Schützenhaus until Bellevue. We have
must be at least six or seven or eight of them.
Yeah. We have a lot of hotels, and during summer they are occupied. And this is the cheesemaker pass by.
Oh, just by with his truck delivering.
Yes, yeah, and he makes this very famous Salisberger cheese.
Yes, and it only comes from here. And it bears the name. In fact, I went doing a little shopping before.
Yes,
and I bought one to bring home because
nice.
It's one of my favorite cheeses.
Yes.
And we have to explain, there's only one road through the entire village.
Yes.
And it's very long, I guess, from the entrance to the village until the funicular
tribe.
Station,
yeah,
tribe.
Or until tribe,
yeah.
you can say, yes.
Yeah, and that's
street.
What, maybe about 1.5 kilometers, a mile long.
Yes.
And all of the houses and the little shops, and there is not many, are left and right of the main road. We're looking at something which I'd like to walk up to, if you don't mind, Mr. Odermatt. It's an old chapel. I think it's 1436 or 1476.
Yes.
Let's just go in and have a look in here, because it's quite a beautiful chapel. And inside the door, well, the acoustics change, and the smell of candle smoke.
Yes.
People have lit candles here.
Yes.
And people are very devout. I know that religious services are held here on a regular basis. And this is also a chapel of pilgrimage.
Yes.
What is the story there?
It's a pilgrimage place. And if someone was ill at home or some accident happened at home, then they made a pilgrimage here to this place. And all these votive tafeln, we call it votive plates, we could say.
These are, in a way, prayers or even confirmations of help from the Virgin Mary.
Exactly, yes, mm-hmm. Yes.
And giving thanks for the help.
Exactly. You know, you can see the story here, huh? 1682.
It's a painting.
Yes, it's a painting. Then you see...
they were cutting down a tree.
And then it was falling on a man.
Uh-huh.
So, and then they came here and prayed. And then there it get help. And this is the whole description. These are very, very beautiful.
The whole story
painting.
Of what happened.
Yes.
How he was saved. Outside again. What else is there to do in Seelisberg? I would say medical tourism, also meditative tourism is important to this area on the one hand. But what about classic tourism? We just were talking about the Rütli Meadow. We looked down on it up here. And this must bring a lot of people.
You know, the Rütli belongs... to the youth of Switzerland. So in the primary school fourth class, you go to class trip you make to the Rütli. And now we have here, this was from 1991, they created this way of Switzerland who goes around.
It's a hiking path, isn't it? Walking path.
Very beautiful, you know.
You see all the historic sites and from different directions, different perspectives.
Yes, and so you can walk around the Lake of Uri. And many, many tourists comes here to walk, to make this beautiful walk. They come up from Rütli. And then to Seelisberg, and they walk to Flüelen, Sisikon, and back to Brunnen. Yes, and then you can also come with the boat from Lucerne. It's a fantastic, beautiful boat ride. You come to Treib, and then you go up with the funicular, and then you walk this way of Switzerland.
You made a very important point, Mr. Odermatt, because I've done this so many times. This is, I mean, central Switzerland in general. This is the Swiss heartland.
Yes.
This is where it all began here. And it is indescribably beautiful. And it's a real challenge to describe the beauty, I must say.
Yeah, it's
I'm glad. Well, I'm had on our website, I'm glad that we have multimedia aids as well with pictures. Because you can take Lucerne, which is, of course, the famous destination that everyone goes to. And then you can get on a lake steamer. And you can get on and off at so many destinations on the lake and get off at a little place called Treib.
Yes.
At the bottom here of Seelisberg. Yes. Go up in this funicular, which takes maybe 6 or 7 minutes. And then you can walk up and you see people in the summer especially. The woods are so beautiful. They have camping places. They have barbecue, grilling spots there.
Yes, and the children can play there. It's a very beautiful place.
There's even accommodation for classes and groups.
And
the hotels here and the magnificent beauty. Well, look, at the turn of the century, it was the wealthy British aristocrats who caused them to build this fantastic hotel. The Grand Hotel Sonnenberg.
Yes.
That style of tourism doesn't exist, but the beauties that brought them here still does in a very big way. I know in the area there are so many excursions that can be done. There's also skiing. There's walking is just the beautiful here.
Yes.
And also by car, because don't forget, this extension of the Lake of Lucerne, which is technically the Lake of Uri, is part of the great, classic, famous Gotthard route to the south, to Ticino, to the south, to Italy, and Italian-speaking Switzerland. And here is also that fantastic highway that goes through the 17-kilometer-long Gotthard Tunnel. So from north, from south, you're right in the middle of it
Exactly,
here. And easy to get to from any direction.
Exactly, you have right.
And breathtaking views, lots of peace and quiet, or as active as you want to make it.
Yes.
But this is not a so-called glitter resort. For that, you have to go somewhere else. This is for people looking for reflection, for peace and quiet, and meditating over not only transcendental meditation, but also the history of this great country in Europe. Thank you so much for telling us about Seelisberg in Canton or state of Uri in central Switzerland, the Swiss heartland, the birthplace of the Swiss Confederation, started on the 1st of August in the year 1291. For Switzerland and Sound, this is Bob Zanotti.
If you want more information about Switzerland in Sound, check them out online at www.switzerlandinsound.com.